What? Tell us what you want.
Well, personally, I'd like you to take your shirt off and dance around for me.
Hello and welcome to episode 111 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
So we have two movies for you today. Our hot topic slash mini review is going to be for the movie Holidays, which just premiered on VOD, and I think it's in select theaters as well, and it also just played in the Tribeca Film Festival. And then we're going to talk about this weekend's wide release, The Huntsman Winter's War. I hate that title.
It's
all right, but first, back to Holidays. I'm going to start with that one. Here is the IMDb synopsis. Holidays is an anthology feature film that puts a uniquely dark and original spin on some of the most iconic and beloved holidays of all time by challenging our folklore, traditions, and assumptions. I guess that's kind of fair. It basically is a horror anthology, and it starts with Valentine's Day, and then each segment hits a different holiday until it gets to New Year's Eve. And similar to the large majority of horror anthologies, you always run the risk of putting a whole bunch of them together, and then some of them stink, some of them are okay, some of them are great. This, to me, though, is actually one that stays pretty consistent. I wouldn't say any of them, like, blew me away, but I also don't think any of them were all that terrible. My favorite of the bunch were New Year's Eve, which is obviously the last one, and that one was directed by Adam Egypt Mortimer. And I just thought that was like a nice little, you know, simple twist that I didn't really see coming. But my favorite of the bunch was
Seriously?
Actually...
I saw that twist coming from like the first minute.
Oh,
I'm surprised because you're usually the one that guesses horror twists like way ahead of time.
Which is funny because that was my problem with a good chunk of the other ones is that I saw the twist coming. And I wrote it in my review. Every time I'm like, oh, I knew the twist. I knew the punchline. It wasn't that good. But for this one, that kind of...
That's
I
so
got
funny.
Really excited by that. Like when you...
what was your favorite one?
My favorite one was for St. Patrick's Day. It's like really bizarre and weird, and I couldn't believe where that went in the end.
It's by the director of Dracula
amazing.
Untold,
this is
you guys.
Amazing. Because Angie and I have had a conversation about this movie already, and it's literally like, it's like as if Perry had like listened in on that conversation and then decided to troll us during this review.
It's like Perry's
because
winning its
I agree
opposite
with you.
Day.
I just
in that,
really appreciate
I think,
how
wait.
They wove the St. Patrick's Day folklore into it, and I thought that one was one of the most well-shot ones of the bunch, and I thought the lead actress
well
in that was really good. That's a beautiful, beautiful short.
It's very well shot. I will, but like I agree with you in that I think the movie is consistent, but I think it's consistently bad. I thought the shorts were so like overall were really predictable, and I thought they were just so much like woman being punished for sex, which like I know is a horror thing, but I was so like tired of it. And then like the only
there was
one
a, there
I
was
really
a lot
liked,
of like nightmarish birthing scenarios.
Yeah,
like a surprising
amount
of them.
Which is, like, something that speaks to me, because I think children and having them is terrifying. But, like, this movie, I just felt like, it felt like such a, it felt so sloppy to me. I was very frustrated. I really enjoyed Father's Day.
I like that
but,
one, too.
Yeah, that was
Yeah,
that was really
but it
well kind of
tosses away with the ending. It kind of tries to go for an ending that changes the whole tone, and I won't get into specifics on that. But overall, like, I get very frustrated with anthology films, because, like, aside from Trick or Treat, I tend to find them really disappointing. And, like, when you're going to take on a holiday anthology, people are immediately going to compare it to Trick Retreat, and the Halloween section of this, which is the one directed by Kevin Smith, is by far one of the worst ones.
You know what's funny is that even though Trick or Treat is classified as an anthology, I never refer to it as that. Whenever I compare anthologies, I'm normally going back to VHS, because that's the one that kind of sparked the craze again. Trick or Treat to me works more as like a standard narrative feature because those stories are so well woven together.
I mean, I'll point out that
true.
Trick or Treat is all directed by one person, whereas this
true.
One and VHS are directed by a bunch of different people. I mean, I don't really, like, I can't get that mad at an anthology film for being uneven because that's kind of just the nature of the format. Like, you pull together several very different directors with several very different styles to tackle entirely different stories. Like, of course it's going to be kind of uneven. But I thought that, you know, like, this one was kind of uneven, but still, I think, on, like, the kind of not so good side of uneven. Like, the only one I really liked, kind of like Christy, was Father's Day, which I thought was... like, just, like, really subtle and interesting and well done. That's the only one that I kind of wish I could see as a feature film, especially because I feel like the ending really whiffs it. Like, it's just, It kind of seems like they build all this great tension, and then they're not really sure where to go, so then the movie just ends.
Yeah, so that's what kept that one from being one of my favorites.
Yeah, but like it's like the beginning of it is like so good that that one's my favorite. The Kevin Smith one I really didn't like because this is the thing. Like, I mean, I am on record as not being a huge Kevin Smith fan, but like, you know, when I saw Tusk, I remember being like the first half of Tusk being really impressed at like how good he is at building like dread and suspense because it's not something that people associate with the guy that directed Clerks. So I was actually kind of excited to be like, okay, so I wonder what it's going to be like when he actually directs like a whole feature, or like not a feature, but like a whole movie that's a horror movie. And the answer is that he went in the other direction, and like it's really like broad, it looks really garish, it doesn't really have a point. Like, I don't know, I found that one really disappointing. I know it's the one that's going to get the most attention because Kevin Smith,
but it's like it also just doesn't feel like it's about anything really. It nope. feels like the most barely connected to its holiday, and like I found that one so tedious. And I didn't know Kevin Smith. Like, I saw this before I knew Kevin Smith had anything in it. So then I got, like, mad because I felt like I had been tricked into watching another stupid Kevin Smith movie. And, like, I loved him so much when I was, like, in my teens. And I respected his filmmaking so much. But I feel like I grew up and he hasn't. So now his filmmaking just drives me fucking nuts.
All right. So clearly we are not on the same page with this
Here's
one.
What I'm gonna throw
I had
out
some
there.
Fun with it. And if you watch it at home on VOD, I think it's well worth just hanging out for night. I think it's, like, between 90 and 100 minutes. I really like the anthology format because when I get bored of something, I know something's coming next. And while I won't say that I got bored of any of these where I was like, all right, when's this one over and it's on to the next one, the one main problem that I had with this one is so many of them missed the mark with their ending. So it's like, whereas something could have been cool in the end, I'm like, meh, whatever, next one.
Mm. I mean, okay, we should
I do want to say...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think we should totally move on. But I want to say that as a counterpoint to this, there was a movie at Tribeca called Always Shine that is like a... It's like a psychological thriller, and I just want to throw out there, I have a review online. That one I want us to review as soon as it gets a theatrical release because that, I think, is really interesting and like a very fun take on horror.
Alrighty.
Throw that out.
All right, a mini review of it. Entirely different film.
This
Great.
Is a bonus episode. All right, now on to the main review of the week, The Huntsman. I keep wanting to put an S on Huntsman's, which doesn't make any sense. The Huntsman Winter's War.
I
Christy,
feel like nobody said
that
title out loud before they confirmed that as the title.
Seriously.
It's impossible to say.
Yeah, also Winter's War makes no damn sense, but fine,
no.
Sure, well, whatever.
There's ice.
So the Huntsman
There's an
Winter
ice
Soldier.
Queen, it's winter.
I don't care. That's what I'm calling it from now on. As a war between rival queen sisters Ravina and Freya escalates, Eric and fellow warrior Sarah, members of the Huntsman army raised to protect Freya, try to conceal their forbidden love as they combat Ravina's wicked intentions. That is like one of the worst sentences ever.
It
F minus.
Nothing to do with the movie, really.
No, here's the thing that I take issue with about this movie is that the commercials are selling you a totally different movie than you're getting. Because the commercials mm-hmm. sell it like, one, that it's a prequel, which it's not, and two, mm-hmm. that it's about Freya fighting her sister. But that doesn't happen, spoilers, until like the last act of the film.
And I want to point out, the trailers work so hard to hide the fact that the Huntsman is the main character of a movie called Huntsman Winter's War. Like, I remember watching the trailers and like being like, is Chris Hemsworth even? Oh, there he is. But it
I didn't process how misleading the trailers were until after I saw the movie. And the fact that in the trailers, it blatantly says what happens before Snow White. Every time the thing comes on TV, I'm like, no!
The first 10 minutes
alive.
Of it are set before the events of Snow White and the Huntsman. And then the rest of it is way after.
Yeah.
Oh,
and like,
it drove me nuts.
That's what drove me nuts about this movie is just that it can't seem to decide which movie it is because there are two movies here. There are the movies about the sister queens that are sort of frenemies and have magic powers and wear the fiercest clothes ever. And like, look, I'd be there for that movie all day.
But do
but
they?
That's not what this movie is.
I felt like Emily Blunt was like a statue the entire movie. She could
yeah,
not
she has
move
nothing to
in
do.
Any of those outfits.
What? I loved all.
Well, I liked looking at them, but she was legit like a statue because she could. They were too restricting and heavy, and God knows what else.
And also,
she
I think they're
move.
Like you're an ice queen, and she was like, okay, I'm not going to move my face,
well,
or emotions, and I was like,
you know, they all
just,
had that problem. I feel like both her
I don't
and
think
Charlize
that's
Theron
true.
Were. I think that they were directed that way because listen to how they talk. If you took out all the dead air in between the words in this movie, you would have shaved off 30 minutes of the movie. They spoke
I don't agree
so
with that
freaking slowly.
Okay.
It was driving
so
me insane.
The other movie that exists in this movie, which is basically the prolonged second act, is actually the stuff about Eric the Huntsman, which the fact that his name is Eric, I don't care how accurate it is. It's not a fairy tale name. It kept taking, every time they're like, hello, Eric. I'm like, I can't.
Excuse me, I'm going to point out that Little Mermaid's prince is named Eric, so it's too a fairy tale name.
Whatever. It's Eric and Sarah. It's too distracting. They're like, Freya, Ravenna, Eric and Sarah. I can't with this. So whatever. Bob and fine. Heaven.
Quiz. Did anyone even catch the name of the dwarves?
No. Yeah, what are they?
I don't know. But like the entire movie, I was listening out for it because those were my favorite Neon characters in the whole thing. And I kept, well, all right, now I know. But the entire movie, I'm like, I like them. Let me listen for their names. And then when I walked out, I couldn't say one of their names. I'm like, yeah, Nick Frost.
I knew what the one younger female dwarf's name was because they say her a lot. Like, they kept being like, where's Dorina or whatever.
I didn't like her. I like the other one.
I like that one, yeah. Okay, so, well, first off, I did enjoy the Huntsman stuff. I think that Chris Hemsworth is really fun when he's doing his kind of doofy gallant thing. I thought that was fun. And he reminded me of, like, A Knight's Tale era Heath Ledger. So I was, like, into that. But, like, the story is just such a mess and doesn't make sense. And the movie is bending over backwards to, like, not deal with Snow White and not deal with the fact that they don't have Kristen Stewart back. Like, there's, like, a shot from behind and you can't see her face. And they're like, Snow White is very ill. And it's just like, she's over there. We're not going to talk about her. And I'm like, this is so weird. And I don't know, man. It was strange. I did like Hemsworth and Chastain stuff, even though I don't necessarily know that I bought them as a romantic couple.
No. I don't think Chris Hemsworth has ever had really strong chemistry, romantic or sexual chemistry with any female co-star that I have seen him with. And the other thing that this solidified for me is that Chris Hemsworth is a comedy actor who is trying to be a dramatic actor. He's the male Rose Byrne. They keep putting him in these dramatic leading roles where, like, you know, he's supposed to frown and look pretty, and like he's like really kind of, he's like always fine but like never really that good. And then, but then you put him in something where he gets to be charming and funny, and like suddenly he comes alive.
Yeah, I liked him in this a lot, and I thought Chastain was fun, like as her female warrior. But, like, the writing is so bad. There's so many lines in it, like, you think you know everything, sister, but you don't. Oh, but I do. And I'm like, that's not good dialogue. That, like, shouldn't make it past, like, the pencil scratches in your notebook. Because when you actually start typing it, you're like, well, like that, but not horrible. Like, and so there's a lot here that is not good. But then there's stuff that I really liked. Like, my favorite part of this movie was Mrs. Bromwyn, which is Sheridan Smith. Yeah. She plays the lady dwarf, who is like a mercenary and has like tattoos on her face and can't be dealing with anybody's nonsense and realizes that Chris Hemsworth looked better with his shirt off. Like, I love all of that. But like, again, she feels like she's in a completely different movie from everybody else.
No, I think her and Nick Frost and the other guy were all on the same page. I feel like there could have been a whole movie about just them because they were so delightful and their delivery of their dialogue was kind of spot on. Whereas every time, you know, Chris Hemsworth was supposed to make a joke, it's like you hit a point in the movie where it's just so boring and the writer just didn't know what to do. So the director's like, Chris, smile now. Smile and nod, wink at the camera. And that's pretty much what he did the entire time.
I thought he was funny. There's like one scene where he pulls off some stupid stunt, but like by barely, and he's like, I need to make better plans. And like that made me laugh. Like there are parts of this that I genuinely enjoyed, but like as a whole, it's such a mess.
It's a drag. This movie was a drag to me. It felt like it was two and a half hours long.
It really did. How long is it actually? Because I remember I checked my...
I think it's close to two.
I checked my watch several times because it feels like it goes on forever.
You know and why? Because they talk Angie at one point, so and I was like, slowly. Is
in this movie, right? Because like she's like, there's like, I would say that there's probably like an hour and 40 minutes of this movie that Charlize Theron is not in consecutively.
I would like to point out, I think by far the most feminist thing about the movie that they're kind of trying to market as a feminist movie is the fact that Charlize Theron somehow managed to get the same paycheck as Chris Hemsworth for like a tenth of the work. I'm not even kidding. Yeah. He's in like the whole movie. She's in like the beginning for a little bit and then the end for a little bit and that's it. And like most of the stuff she does just looks like outtakes from her like Dior commercials.
Yeah, I believe that she was on set like 10 days. I'd buy that.
It does look like the Dior commercial. I'm surprised that all four of them agreed to do this movie at all, though, because there's no way in hell that, at the beginning at least, it was a decent script in the least. Like, it really makes me sad if they just took this for a paycheck.
I'm confused why they even made a second one, because the first one, like, barely made money. And then they had that whole
thing. Didn't it make a lot overseas?
Is that what it is? Maybe that's why. But I remember for a while there was, like, a whole thing of, like, are they even going to bother? And then they're like, yeah, we'll do a sequel, but we'll do it with Hemsworth character. But then we see the marketing, and they're not focusing on Hemsworth. They're focusing on all the women. But, like, this is not a good movie for women. And I don't just mean, like, because all of the characters are infuriating, in that basically the theme of the movie, it goes back to that kind of Jurassic World and Avengers Age of Ultron theme of, like, if you don't have a man or a baby in your life, then you're a monster woman. So
or
that's
Oz
tiresome.
Great and Powerful. That had a similar theme of, like, you know, like, women, they're, like, all pretty and nice and stuff. And then, but then if she doesn't get to have a man or a baby, bitches be crazy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, for clarification, the first movie had a big opening weekend, but it also had, according to Box Office Mojo, at least a $170 million production budget. So even though it almost made $400 million worldwide,
It cost $170 million to make, and it made $400
million
worldwide. And then for some reason, they decided to make a sequel without the biggest star from the first film, which is Kristen Stewart, who watched that film and was like, you know what I want to know?
Well, we know
is
it made
Kristen
a lot Stewart. After the theatrical release on home video. Maybe.
I guess.
Home video. Why? Like, what am I, from the 90s? You know, digital stuff.
No, I know.
No, but I know what you mean. But again, though, who was watching Snow White for Hemsworth or Charlize? Like, it's there are better movies from both of them that are better.
Oh, I think a lot of people are going
to
go see it for Charlize and Emily Blunt, to see them go head to head. I bet you anything that kind of promotion will draw in some people.
Oh, yeah,
even though it didn't really make all that much money this weekend.
That's why I was interested in this movie, but that's why I was also frustrated, because that's such a small section of the movie. It's a complete bait and switch, and I find that really frustrating. But I have to say that even though there's a lot about this movie I don't like, and I think the gender politics of this movie suck, like, they're so regressive, and it's hilarious because they keep pulling all this stuff from, like, the Snow Queen, which of course Frozen did too, but Frozen was actually a progressive princess movie, and this one, like, Universal completely blunders it. But anyway, I did like this better than the first one, because I thought Snow White and the Huntsman was incredibly dull. I thought it all looked
I thought this was the same exact thing as that. Like, it had the same dull, like, dragging pace. It's like, oh, it looks really cool in the promos when Charlize Theron is like a creepy witch, but, like, why do they have to speak that way? That's what I don't understand. Why do they have to talk so freaking slowly the entire movie? I was squirming in my seat every single time.
Speaking that slowly, I do remember.
Now that I said it, though, anytime you rewatch one of these movies, all you're gonna be like is like, come on,
okay,
second word in the sentence.
I'm not gonna fucking rewatch any of these movies, so I don't know what you're talking about. But the thing that I did notice is that there's an opening narration that goes on for, like, the first third of the movie.
Did you recognize the voice?
Apparently it's Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Talk about someone who you would think would have better things to do. Everyone in this movie, except for the director, who's a first-time director, should have better things to do.
He is a delightful narrator, though.
No, he's not. I got
no. I thought he was perfect for this.
Maybe it's just that the copy is so bad. There's one part about 10 to 30 minutes in, I don't know, that at the beginning feels forever long, where he says, she could not raise a child, and so she would raise an army. And I was like, fuck this movie.
Liam Neeson sitting in a rocking chair in the corner with, like, a big heavy storybook just reading to me.
I kind of feel like if you're going to have a narrate, I think what it bothered me about the narration is, like, okay, a lot of fairy tale movies open with some kind of narration, but it went on for so long that it really started to feel like a crutch. Like, the movie wasn't sure how else to convey any of this information.
Because it would drop out for, like, 10 minutes.
Read it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it would drop out for 10 minutes and you thought, we're done with that. And then he would appear again. And I remember because Angie specifically grabbed my arm and started laughing into my shoulder, because all of a sudden we're back with the narrator again. This movie feels like such an afterthought. There's so much random stuff shoved into it. It's like as they were going, they're like, oh, let's grab some of this and some of this and some of this. It feels like a weird shopping spree where they didn't know what they wanted. And some of these things are fun because, of course, like that's almost just like, I don't know, you grab enough stuff, some of it's going to be cool, but like it's not cohesive, and moreover, it's so frustrating because I just don't even, Angie, you made the point after we saw it and said, I don't know who this movie's for, and that keeps echoing in my head that I'm like, I don't know who this movie's for.
I kind of see who it's I actually kind of, like, after thinking about it since our conversation, I think it's marketed at, you know, women. It's marketed at a female audience. But the thing is, like, it kind of plays like a YA story, like Divergent or something, except that all the stars in it are in their 30s and 40s, so they're, like, way too old for that segment. So I guess it's actually just supposed to be for adult women, but it's, like, kind of too... And it's marketed toward adult women, which is why I think the promos focus so heavily on Blunt and Charlize Theron and Jessica Chastain. But it's like kind of like, I don't know, as I guess,
but it's
so
very,
I guess,
juvenile in
target,
its writing
audience, but it feels too stupid for me. And then as you guys have pointed out over and over today, it's a bait and switch because it's not really about them. It's about Chris Hemsworth. Who the fuck cares about Chris Hemsworth when he's not Thor?
I think this could have worked if they had a Hansel and Gretel witch hunters approach to it. Every time it's like a fairy tale like settings. Well, every time it's a fairy tale like setting like this and it's boring, I immediately go to Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters because that was the most ludicrous plot ever, but it was so much fun.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I think that Charlize is going full on camp in that, and so I appreciate
Charlize
that.
Charlize Theron is like Eva Green level in this almost.
Yes.
Eva Green is like far superior to Charlize Theron in this movie. Eva Green does
I'll
it so much
that,
better
but
than
at least
she's doing it here.
I think that's what she's reaching for. And, like, that I admired. That makes sense to me. But then, by contrast, like, Emily Blunt, they're like, oh, well, your heart is frozen, so you can't feel things. And I'm like, that is inherently uninteresting to watch Emily Blunt just always be quiet and then occasionally throw her hand up
and make
an
ice
wall.
I didn't take it as her heart was frozen. I took it as she was tired and that dress was heavy.
I took it as Emily Blunt was like, if I just stand here, they're gonna give me a paycheck. Think about the paycheck, Emily. Think about the boat that you want to buy. Think about the boat. Think about the boat.
You know what amazed me the most about this movie is that I thought, okay, the dresses look great, some of the set design looks great, but when it was a CG landscape, this movie was freaking cartoonish and ugly. When that was what the first movie had going for it, and the director of this movie is the visual effects supervisor of the first movie. So I thought with a VFX guy at the helm, I thought those landscapes were going to be incredible. Every time they cut to a wide shot of the land, it was just awful.
It's ludicrous to me that they're like, oh, this person's never directed a movie before, but they do visual effects, so let's bring them in. Like, I just don't understand why you would give someone, like, that huge a budget. I mean, like, I'm not personally surprised that, like, tonally this doesn't make any damn sense. That's not what this guy's done his entire career. It feels like they set them up to fail.
He did direct a short film. According to IMDb, he did direct a short film called Carrot vs. Ninja, so he's got one credit to his name.
Wasn't Maleficent directed by a visual effects supervisor also?
Yeah, and Tron, I think. And I think wasn't Snow White and the Huntsman too? Weren't they all VFX guys that got bumped up?
I think Snow White and the Huntsman, I think Rupert Sanders was like a music video and commercials guy. I don't think he was VFX.
Okay.
I think. I could be wrong. That makes sense. I don't have IMDb in front of me right now.
I just don't understand. I don't understand. I feel like watching this movie to me is one of the it's a good argument for why we need more women behind the scenes, because I feel like if you had like a woman, you know, director or a woman like screenwriter or even just someone that understands women better, there's someone to be like, oh, these lines of dialogue are terrible. These don't sound like real people at all.
The one hand, I agree. On the other hand, I feel like not understanding women is just one of the many, 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 many problems with it. Like, the dialogue, the character motivations don't make sense because this person doesn't seem to understand female characters, but the dialogue isn't bad because of that. It's because not everyone can write dialogue, and whoever wrote this can't fucking write dialogue.
Yeah, this is, I can't say this guy's name at all. There's so
the
many letters.
The director's name?
No, the writing guy. Evan Spiliotopoulos?
Oh, right.
Craig
that guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. This is a mess. It bums me out. This is such a mess. Oh, he also wrote Hercules.
Yay.
Oof. Oh, no, guys. He's apparently also a screenwriter on the new Beauty and the Beast.
Uh-oh.
I feel like Disney... I guess Maleficent and Oz the Great and Powerful is the worst case scenario, and Cinderella and Jungle Book is the best case scenario there. Disney at least has their house in order, so it's at least usually watchable, which is...
That's true.
Yeah. But this movie...
So we should wrap up. I don't know. I like this the most of the three of us, I think. And I would say it's like, it's fine if you're going to rent it, but it's just such a mess. And I just honestly don't know... You'll like parts of it. And I don't feel strong enough to be like, yeah, you should go see it.
I thought this movie... I feel like I didn't sound like either of them. I just sounded like when Dory does Whale in Finding Nemo. I thought this movie was boring. So yeah, that's pretty much it. I don't think this is worth your money at all. I was bored to tears. I didn't have fun. Don't go.
I don't think anyone really needs to watch this movie. Look, if you're the one person out there who watched Snow White and the Huntsman was like, oh my god, you guys, you know what I want is like a whole movie about the Huntsman without Snow White, then like, yeah, you should watch this movie because you're the only person it was made for. Otherwise, like, I mean, the world's not going to end if you rent it, but you could also just like watch the trailer, which is like more fun than the movie, so.
Or just go see Jungle Book instead.
Or that, yeah.
All right, so that is a wrap on episode 111 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You know where to find us. Go to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and comment. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter, @popcornprosecco, and please like us on Facebook as well. And then you can catch all three of us all over the internet, too. Angie, do you want to take it first?
Yep, I'm on Twitter, @AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I am on Twitter, @KristyPuchko, that's KristyPuchko, and I write all over the web. You can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
I was, like, mouthing it while you guys were saying it. I'm going to nail your outros at some point, because clearly I can do impressions.
I have to not even look at you two anymore, because I know that you got, like, I've seen you guys mouth along with mine on occasion, and it fucks me up so hard, and then I'm like, I'm Christy Puchko.
Christy, I heard a rumor that you write all over the web, but we can find your career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
This was all just me trolling you guys to give my plug more times. What?
For new listeners, we record where we look at each other through Google Hangout, but you're only listening to the audio. So that's your visual reference there. But you can find me on Twitter @PNMRoth, and my writing is on Collider.com. So thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Are you not the hero of every story you tell?
Well, that's because I'm very brave.